Hananian.
This car has the camera in the rearview mirror, and it has the ability for self-park, for adaptive cruise control, you know, laser-guided, all the stuff, all the bells and whistles, right? All the things that, you know, we're heading towards. We're heading towards this, folks, and there's nothing you're going to do about it.
The Car Doctor.
I really wanted to tell you how much I appreciate the show, how good you are, how much information you give out, and how dang great on automotive you are.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
It really is quite a rush to be here and do this radio show each and every week. I'm not sure where to start this week because... You know, I guess it's, listen, you and I are just sitting down and we're having a conversation, right? We could be across the microphone or we could be across from the kitchen table at having a cup of coffee. I think it's difficult for us as the average layperson to understand what's going on in the world around us when it comes to automobiles. I think there is an awful lot of technology being thrown about and, you know, there's a lot of opinions attached to that technology. What works, what doesn't, what will be, what won't be, what will happen, what won't happen. I look at Texas, and I feel for the people in Texas, and I'll be the first to admit, I don't necessarily understand what really happened in Texas other than the fact that they've got no electricity right now. You know, they've got power issues, and they've got you know, problems with the grid. And I'm not going to dive into the politics of it, and frankly, that's not my forte. That's not what I'm here for. That's not what it's about. I've got my own opinions as an American. I think I'm entitled to that still, but that's not what I want to express to you. My concern is Texas has a power grid problem. California has a power grid problem. Nevada has a power grid problem. There are states with population, obviously, with cars in them that have power grid problems. How in the heck are we going to, in depending upon which manufacturer you listen to, in 5, 10, or 15 years, come up with an all-electric model lineup? How are we going to provide the electricity for it? And again, you know, I'm just an average guy here, just trying to understand everything. And, you know, which news source do you want to believe? And it's tough. It really is. It's difficult. My concern with electric vehicles, and I think this has to be brought up because I think I have to explain this every week. You got to start thinking about this and you've got to make your voices heard. In Texas, there's no electricity now, what, 7-10 days? It's been a tumultuous week and a half, 2 weeks, I think. I can stockpile gasoline. I can put 10 gallons or 20 gallons or 30 gallons or more of fuel in my garage, I can still get my vehicle around. I can still go where I have to go. Unless I've got a spare battery pack or a generator, which will require either natural gas or gasoline or diesel fuel or some other alternative fossil fuel system to run and operate, I've got no way to charge that battery. I've got no way, you know, you can't go next door and borrow 5 gallons of electrons. It's just not possible. Not with today's technology. And here's that average person concept again. Does somebody higher up than us, higher up the food scale, somebody above my pay grade know something I don't know? Are they coming out with a way and a means? And shouldn't they be explaining that to us? Instead of car companies, GM 2035, Jaguar this week, I think said 2030, all electric vehicles. Not that anybody cares who wants to drive a Jaguar. Jaguar. Well, only kidding. Some people do. But where's it going to come from? Where's the technology going to come from? You know, one of the things that we all understand, you ever try to get your kids to clean up their room? And you can yell at your kids and say, clean up your room, clean up your room, clean up your room, until you show them a reason why. Or a direct cause and effect and a consequence. And hey, if you do this, this is what happens. They get it, right? They're not explaining electric cars to us. They're telling us to go clean up our room when we're going, no, the room's not dirty. I don't want to. I'm busy. I've got to hang out with my friends. I want to do this. I want to do that. They're not telling us, yeah, okay, we've got your back. You know what? We're going to be able to make it so that you can, you know, charge off the sun with solar systems. We're going to make it so that you can store extra batteries. We're going to make it so that you're never disabled and without electricity, much in the same way you wouldn't be without gasoline. All right? They've got to at least equate the system, the operating ability, that technology, to the freedom of and the ability of and the availability to have of gasoline. Just, again, just my perspective, just my way of looking at it. I think Texas is an eye-opener on a lot of levels without politics, folks. Just, you know, of what's to come. We're not prepared. We're not ready for this. Imagine if it was in 15 years, all electric vehicles. I understand that Texans were surviving by, you know, sleeping in their cars overnight with the heaters running because it's so cold. And imagine in 15 years, you may not be able to do that because where are you going to borrow the electricity from? And that's what I think I want to leave with you as we kick off this hour of the Car Doctor. Look, you know, and the stories come off the top of my head about things I see in the shop every week that tell me that we're not ready for this. We're not. We're not ready for electric vehicles. I don't care what they sell us. Somebody's got to fix it. And trust me, this industry is not ready to fix it. I know guys that can't spell OBD2 and ADOS put together in one sentence. And now they're going to give us electric vehicles, which, yeah, probably not going to be repaired by the automotive aftermarket. It's probably going to be dealer only. And then that's a nightmare. We could have the what-if conversation about what's availability of service times. And yeah, I know electric vehicles won't break. Trust me, they'll break. Let's mass produce them higher than the level Tesla's doing right now or any of the other electric cars to the point where you're putting millions of them out on the street at such a service level. And when they want us to stop, you know, when they, and everybody's like, well, I'll never give up my internal combustion engine. You know what? When they want you to stop driving your gasoline car, they'll get you to do it. They'll either do it by eliminating gasoline and they'll trickle it down or make it so expensive you won't be able to afford to drive it, or they'll do it by parts. They do it now by parts. 08 Jeep Grand Cherokee SRT8. That's a fancy Jeep, in case you don't know that. That's the, they call that the Corvette of Jeeps, of Grand Cherokees. It's got a fancy engine in it. It's got a better handling and suspension package. It's got loud exhaust. They're kind of neat. They're sort of collectibles, right? An 08 Jeep SRT8 came into the shop this week. Needed an upper radiator hose. No parts store had it. No manufacturer outside of Chrysler had it. Chrysler had it. There was two left, two, in the New York depot where we pull parts from. We got one, $150-some-odd for an upper radiator hose. But what are you going to do? As I said to Stevie, you got to have it, kid. You know, his old hose had a split in it and it was ready to fail. You know, what am I going to do? Send you down the road and put you in a precarious situation where, you know, late one morning or early one afternoon or vice versa, the truck's on the side of the road. It's not like you can go and get parts for that anywhere else. I'm telling you, nobody had parts for it. You know why you don't see anybody going cross country in a 72 Monte Carlo anymore? I think about this. You know, I've got a 72 Monte. And I think about, you know, I used to drive that car everywhere. And you know, the older you get, the faster you think you were, or the smarter you think you were as a kid until you realize reality. And you say, gee, how did I manage to take that car to Boston and Wildwood, New Jersey, and Washington, D.C., and North Carolina? How did I do that? My God, didn't I worry about breaking down? No. You know why? Because it was 1975, and you could get parts for a 72. I remember breaking down in the Garden State Parkway on my way to college in my Monte Carlo, and it broke down. It needed a hose or a belt or something else. I put it on the side of the parkway. I put the flashers on. I jumped the divider. I walked up. I went in a couple of blocks into Orange, New Jersey. I found an auto parts store, bought parts, came back, put the parts on the car, and you know, off I went. Can't do that anymore. That 72 Monte Carlo gets stuck. It's 40-some-odd years later. Where are you going to get parts for it? Where are you going to get parts for that SRT8 Jeep? Where are you going to get parts in 15 years for that whatever it is in your driveway right now, that 2019 Camry gas engine, where are you going to get parts for it? So when they want you to stop, you're going to stop, trust me. And whatever's available is what you're going to have to drive. So I'm just trying to ask you nicely and remind you that you need to be aware. You have a voice in this. You have the ability to say something to your elected officials and pay attention when they talk, because they're telling you it's going to be electric. They're telling you that they're going to do away with gasoline. And they're showing you the future every night on the news. All you got to do is look and see, hey, here's what's going on in Texas. Right now, my money is on the fact that what we see in Texas is going to be every day, because they're just not ready, but they're still going to shove it through. Trust me. I've been around long enough to know that. My name's Ron Ananian, and I am the Car Doctor. I am here at 855-560-9900. I'll be back to take all of your calls right after this. Don't go away.
Little GTO, you're really looking fine. Three deuces and a four-speed and a 389.
Need advice on how to maintain that classic GTO? Ron is the guy. 855-560-9900. Here's Ron.
Hey, let's get on over to Ben in Maine and talk to him about his 05 GMC. Ben, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. Ron Ananian at your service. How can I help?
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Your monologue brought up a lot of memories about interstate repairs.
Yeah, right. You could do it then. Listen, I remember going on. Vacations. Dad drove an old Lincoln, and we'd be on our way to Canada, and something would break, and I would walk with him to the auto parts store. That's how I got it. I was 8 years old, walking down the throughway where my mother and brother and sister sat in the car, and we'd go to the auto parts store, get a fan belt, get a hose, get a whatever, and you're not going to be able to do that, and that's a problem. How can I help you today, Ben?
All those topics bring up so many different things to talk all day. But the issue I have right now, I bought an old truck for my son, just something that, I didn't want him damaging by the new vehicles. So I bought him an old 05 GMC, needed a little bit of repairs, had a low mileage, but got all the repairs done. It's all running, going, inspected, everything's safe. But one of the things that I've noticed is that when I drive it, when you hit the brakes, the anti-locks always kick on, no matter what the circumstances. You can feel the pulsating through the pedal, and you can feel the tires, stopping on and on and on and on and off. So something's going on with either the junction box where all the lines hook up to, or the sensors.
Okay, so
and
in other
I
words,
really delved into it.
In other words, I'll paint the scenario. You're approaching a stop sign. At 30 miles an hour, and as you slow down somewhere under the 10 mile an hour mark, you feel the ABS kick on and the pedal starts to wiggle and vibrate.
Exactly.
Okay. And it's always at that lower speed, right? It's not doing it at 30 or 35 or 25.
To be frank, I have not, mashed the brakes at 40 or 50. I've just noticed it driving normally when I pull into the yard, completely dry pavement, and you can feel those kick in.
Right. But it's always as you're approaching a stop, right? You're deaccelerating to that
exactly.
Point of stop. 10 miles an hour or less, all of a sudden you feel the pedal kind of vibrate and jerk, and you're just like, what happened, right? You're sort of confused.
Exactly.
Okay. So what's going on is, and let me clarify, there's no warning lights on the dashboard. There's nothing to indicate a trouble code is being set, correct?
Well, the only thing that comes up is an EVAP, and I just clear it with my scan tool.
Okay. Do you have the ability to look at ABS, Ben?
I'm not sure if I have a Mac tools. I would consider it an economy version.
Okay.
It was probably $250.
Right.
But I do not think it has that capability.
Right. So
of either chipping airbag or ABS.
Yeah, you've probably got an OBD2 tool, not something that is going to be. Your make model
specific. Yeah, just a handheld device.
Got it. Okay. So what you want to do is, if you can, it would be nice to scan for codes. My educated guess from my seat here is you're not going to have any. And the fault is there because one of the ABS wheel speed sensors is indicating a different speed than the other three.
Okay.
Think about how ABS works. All right. ABS works on the premise that it's looking at the rotational speed of each tire generated by an electronic sensor via a signal. So it sees each tire, you know, in a sensor digital waveform format, and it sees everybody. That's how it knows everybody's doing 10, 12, 15, 20, 25, 30, 40, 50, 60, etc. So it can't see it the way a human being would see it. It has to see it with a sensor. If it has a sensor that is reporting 15 miles an hour and going through a faster rate of deacceleration than the other three, and the other three might be at 18, or the other three might be 15 but not showing slowing down, it's going to take that as that one at 15 that's not slowing down at the same rate is either going to slip. It doesn't know if it's on a piece of ice, some wet leaves, you know, it's lost traction on the road. It interprets the difference in wheel speed signal output from that sensor against the other three as an ABS event about to happen, and starts to begin pulsating ABS, pulse the brakes on and off, on and off, on and off, trying to slow that vehicle down. If you want to prove this, okay, that this is where we're headed, one of the quickest and simplest things you can do, and this is why I'd like you to see is scan it for a code first, is I'm sure you can find up front one of the ABS wheel speed sensor connectors, right?
Yep, I know exactly what.
Okay, two-wire connector. It's going to be the sensor harness coming off the unit. Unplug it. Unplug either one, doesn't matter. What you're going to do is...
Okay, so...
Well,
so you're saying is one wheel at a time, do this. And
No. Just unplug one sensor. All right. First, let's prove the theory. All right. Unplug a sensor. I want you. What this is going to do is disable the ABS, which isn't working right now anyway. All right. So let's disable the ABS. Let's just unplug one sensor. That's going to set a circuit code for that sensor. All right. It's going to turn the light on the dashboard, and it's going to disable the ABS. Now drive the truck. If the truck operates normally, normal brakes. Now, it won't have anti-lock. I want to stress that. All right?
Obviously, yeah.
So it won't have anti-lock brakes, because anytime an ABS system has a fault code or a light on, which is one and the same, it's going to disable the system. They don't allow it to work. But at least you know we're in the right arena. All right?
Okay.
The next step would be plug it back in. It would be great if someone had a lab scope, a little bit of high tech here, and we could wave out each sensor. A nice two-channel or four-channel lab scope would be even better. Start waving sensors, comparing left front to right front, left rear to right rear, and look to see who's got the signal that's lying. All right? And then at that point, it's going to be a sensor replacement in the case of your truck. My guess is it's one of the fronts. The fronts were more common to fail, and that's generally what happens, and it's actually going to be part of the wheel bearing bin, especially if it's a high salt state like Maine or like New Jersey or New York, etc. But start there. Let's at least prove the theory correct that we're on the right trail, and then we can talk more next week if you need me. I'm here for you. You take good care. I'm Ron Anani, the Car Doctor. I'm going back to talk to you right after this. Ron Anani, the Car Doctor, at 855-560-9900, 855-560-9900 is the Car Doctor's 24/7 phone number. Give us a call. If we're not live on the air, Tom Ray will call you back next available spot and get you in for the live broadcast. Let's get over to Donna in New York, 2019 Jeep Cherokee, and wants to talk about start-stop. Donna, welcome aboard. How can I help?
Right. Hi, Ron.
Hi.
I want your opinion of that automatic start-stop feature that turns the engine off. Doesn't this cause excessive wear on the starter or crankshaft?
You would think so. Excessive wear on starter, battery, flywheel, and you would hope that the engineers have improved it and used better material and better technology to ensure, you know, reliability and make it last. You know where I worry most about something like this, Donna, is when the car gets older. Right now it's a 2019. What is it, 2 years old?
Yes.
What are you going to do when it's 4 or 5 years old? And, you know, if you've got a marginal, geez, how many of us can remember we've had cars with marginal starters that, you know, they were a little tired, but we got away with it because we didn't have the money to replace it. You know, and now starters are not $75, $80. Now starters are, you know, $300, $400. They tell me that a start-stop starter averages $1,100.
Ooh, wow.
Right. And then you've got to kind of get into, you know, the technology behind it. And now when that starter becomes marginal, there's going to be no, well, maybe I can wait another 2 weeks or 2 months, or I'm trading it in the spring, or, you know, maybe I don't need to do that right this second. And then there's the concern about what's it doing to the battery, right? The battery's got to be tip top. The battery's got to be 100%, which it really needs to anyway. But start stop just requires that much more because it's more of a strain on the electrical system.
I never thought about that.
Right,
and you know what else is annoying? You can't turn off the default.
In some cars, you cannot. And that's an issue. And then the other thing I don't like about start-stop, since we're having a candid conversation, and this may sound a little strange, so let me just say it. As a father of three daughters, I want to know that when I put them in a car and it's running when it leaves the house, I want to know that they're at least getting to where they're going before it shuts off again.
Yeah, and I have to configure the car every time I get into it.
Right. What do you mean configure it? Configure it how?
I can turn that off manually, but the next time I start the car
right.
again, it's back to start-stop.
There are some companies out there that are plugging in, and I'm not sold on this idea, but I'll share the information with you, and you be your own judge. There are some companies out there that are designing OBD2 connectors. They plug into the diagnostic port under the dashboard that will fake the vehicle out into thinking it's always off, so you can bypass start-stop and it never turns back off again, never turns back on when you go to restart the vehicle. And I'm told they have a good success rate. My jury in my head is still out because I don't know that they want us monkeying around with the OBD2 port like that. But if you scan disable start-stop feature 2019 Jeep, I'm sure it'll come up that way. The other website I'd like you to go read if you want to get some knowledge on batteries, because I think it's important as we go forward, because when it comes time to buy a battery for that vehicle, Donna,
mm-hmm.
it's, you know, you've got to get something right, and you've got to know what you're buying. Go out to autobatteries.com, just like it says, autobatteries.com. There is, oh my gosh, so much information and so much, you know, to reference and read and to your heart's content, and just at least walk away understanding some of the basics. I realize, you know, some of the technology is over the average layman's head, and I get that. But, you know, you've got to have some knowledge so that when you go in and talk to your mechanic, you know, the days of any battery that fits is right are way over. And when it comes to start-stop, it has to fit physically and it has to fit electrically, and autobatteries.com will help you to understand that. So you might want to go there and take a look at that as well.
I did Google this one time,
yeah.
And they said that this car has two batteries in it, and I would have to disable that second battery, which I think is a little one, okay, to get rid of that feature.
Well, yeah, I'd have to see that in writing. And that's why I'm a little leery of why they want you to get... Well, now, are they saying disable that second battery and start-stop won't work and you don't have to plug anything into the OBD2 port?
Well, they didn't mention the OBD2, but they did say that every time I turned the car on, the dashboard was going to tell me that there's something wrong with start-stop.
Yeah, and that's why I don't want to do it that way. My understanding is that the companies that are out there trying to design the workarounds have come up with a method that don't put any warning lights on in the dashboard, don't damage the electrical system, don't ruin anything. They're approved bypasses, I guess. I'll say it like that.
Okay. I'd have to look that up.
You know, so I would look at it from that. I think start-stop is putting us on the road to more expensive repairs later on in the life of the car.
Well, that's nice to know.
Right. and it just satisfies the need now. You know, everything is written to a spec when it comes to an automobile. Start stop is just that much more because it requires the vehicle, everything. The battery has to be just so, the starter has to be just so, the engine oil has to be just so, because incorrect engine oil will prevent a start-stop vehicle from working properly. So, you know, everything has to be exact. And I think they're overcomplicating what they're trying to achieve. And now I'm just going to, you know, put the plug in there. Just imagine when electric cars get here, all right? Because if they can't get an internal combustion engine to do what they want, and it's so complicated, imagine what's going to happen with electric vehicles. I don't see it getting simpler. I see it getting more complicated. Donna, I appreciate the call, and thanks for sharing thoughts. And, you know, stop back again. Let us know what you decide to do with this vehicle. I'm Ron Anani in the Car Doctor, 855-560-9900. We're back right after this. Don't go away. Welcome back. Let's get over to Lenny in Maine. Lenny, you're on with the Car Doctor. How can I help today?
Hey, I have a 2010 Tundra.
Okay.
And I had blinking lights across the dash. Oh, my God. Everything was blinking. The four-wheel drive, the ABS, everything. So I go across. I said, well, I'll fix it sometime. And so I'm going. It still runs. Okay. And it's happening out on the road, and we were out. But anyway, I'm going across the bridge in between the two towns, and the ABS, the sensors started working on the wheel sensors for the, that would be for the air, right? Air pressure or
okay.
Rotation.
You're saying the tire pressure sensor light started to go off.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they, it goes, it shuts off and all my blinking lights stop. So I get home and I ordered some sensors. I said, well, maybe I'll change all the sensors and on the wheel where the wheel goes by, those sensors, right? ABS sensors?
Well, tire pressure sensors, not ABS sensors. Tire pressure sensors. You're talking about the sensors inside the tire, inside the wheel.
No, I'm talking about the ones on the you know, the ones that you put a plug into, the ABS.
Okay. Because what are we talking about? Are we talking about tire pressure light
ABS?
Went off or the ABS light went off?
ABS. Okay. So I'm getting ready to change that sensor and that plug, that particular plug, that side in the back, there was a wire that was loose, you know, or cut. It was cut, kind of.
Okay.
So I said, well, so anyway, I spliced it together the best I could and then the lights all went out. No more lights on the dash and everything. So then eventually I ordered the harness, that piece of harness for that side, and had to replace it. I tried to buy just the pigtail. They don't sell just the pigtail. You got to buy that right side of the harness, you know, the piece that goes from that one tie and one.
Right. Okay. I get it.
Side.
So what's your question to me? Your question to me, Lenny?
Well, no, that guy that called you from Bangor Brewer last week. And I tried to get your phone number to call and tell you what happened because he didn't know what was going on with his vehicle. And I'm just wondering if it was something like that because he had a lot of blinking lights going on.
It could have also been. And I thought he mentioned how his carpeting was wet on the right side. If it's the guy I'm thinking of.
Could something going through the dash or something?
Well, no, I think he was the one with the wet carpet on the right side, and it could be that the AC drain in the evaporator was blocked and water got on the carpet, and then that goes to underneath the right seat is the body module on most Toyotas or on his particular Toyota, if it's the caller I'm thinking of. Yeah. And once water gets into the body module and its connectors, it will just absolutely drive that car bonkers. So it just doesn't, you know, it's over. Game over at that point. So, but yeah, listen, Lenny, I appreciate the call. Thanks for sharing the information. Let's get on over and talk to David in Wisconsin. David, you're on with the Car Doctor. How can I help today, sir?
Okay, 2006 Dodge Dakota, 4x4. I had the exhaust system replaced.
replaced. Okay. David, are you there? We lost David. Something happened to David. David? You know what? Let's pull over and take a pause. Tom, let's pull over, take a pause, 855-560-9900, Ron and Annie, the Car Doctor. When we come back, we'll see if we can find David wherever he went out into the cosmos. Stay tuned. Welcome back, Ron and Annie, the Car Doctor. David, you're still there, sir.
Oh, yes, I am.
Yeah, not sure what happened there. I think, I think the cosmos got in the way. So how can I help you today?
Okay, I had 2006 Dodge Dakota,
right.
4x4.
Right.
It's got 112,000 miles on it, and I had the exhaust system replaced.
Okay.
And there's a ground strap from the frame to the front of the muffler clamp. Is it necessary?
Oh, you have that one. No, I'm only kidding. That was common. They put it is necessary. Ground strap on exhaust. Exhaust systems, believe it or not, will build up static electricity.
Okay.
And that ground strap bleeds it off. And the idea here is we're trying to provide a neutral or safe path to ground for the static electricity because we don't want it to go where? Into all the electronics that a modern vehicle has on it. And,
okay.
ground straps everywhere are common. I mean, there's a lot of places they put ground straps. I remember the early 90s Chrysler products, late 80s Chrysler products, for example, had ground straps on the right front steering knuckle. And you would always find those broken. And in a lot of cases, you would find that broken ground strap was also accompanied at some point shortly thereafter by a bad right front wheel bearing. The wheel bearing would actually, because the wheel bearing would generate enough static electricity that without that ground strap there, it would build up and it would actually build up heat and it would actually weld the bearing together. There was also a case where it was the ground for the engine to the chassis and that was broken and then it would seek ground through the bearing. That was what it was. It was seeking ground through the bearing and the bearing became the ground point on some of these Chryslers, and it would actually weld the bearing and cause it to seize. So, that ground strap, I've always said this, as much as some of the things the car companies do leave me scratching my head, they generally have a reason. When they hang something on a vehicle, if it costs them a quarter of a cent, think about how many millions of vehicles they produce and what that costs them to put it there, and there's always a reason.
Oh, that sounds like a reasonable answer.
You know?
I did put it back on.
Good.
Because the end was rotted.
Right.
That went to the exhaust system.
Right. And
I ended up getting another connector and putting it on.
Yeah, no, it's the right thing to do. And, if it was a welded system and you didn't have gaskets in between and you had good connectivity throughout, you could put it anywhere on the exhaust system. For whatever reason, I'm sure if we could pull up the blueprint for an 06 Dodge Dakota 4x4 with that engine combination, if we could pull up the blueprint and look at the engineer's notes, I'm sure he's got a reason why he put it at the front of the exhaust versus the middle or the back, or why he went to the right side, not the left, and that kind of thing. There's always a reason. Car companies, yes, sometimes they do make mistakes, and we're not all thrilled with some of the things they do. But, they are trying to sell a vehicle that meets and exceeds the need in a variety of places, in the extreme weather. You ever watch, what's that show on TV about Alaska with the family that's, they're up in Alaska and they're pioneering in Alaska? I can't think of the name of it. It's something Alaska.
I know which one you mean.
Yeah. And I look at the vehicles they use and the conditions they're used under. And I keep thinking how different it would be for the car salesman from Florida to go to Alaska and try and sell the vehicle he's selling from one to the other and the extremes. And you look at those temperature extremes and you look at the weather extremes and you say, that's why the car companies have such a hard time to build the product they build. When you think about it, and the car companies are, they're kind of fun to pick on, when we want to. But when we really have to admit it, they really do build some great stuff. It's just sometimes they don't seem to think clearly that it just, you know, why did they do that? Why did they do this? But trust me, the engineer that put that ground strap on, he put it there for a reason. And if it wasn't there, they would have had other complaints and other concerns, and that's a story for another day. David, thank you for the call, and my best to you and yours up there Wisconsin way. And good job putting the ground strap back on. That was the right move. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, reminding you, till the next time, each and every time, good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. See ya.